So, you know, just tell us what's going on, what's on people's minds. Anybody?
Hmm.
Wow.
David, how's it working for you?
David F?
David M.
Well, I guess the last one I was a little bit lost.
Mm-hmm. The field communique?
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, so this was actually our second week where we were working with that idea of the field communique. We're certainly going to talk about it some more today. So, but do you want to say something about the lostness? What is there something there you don't understand, you know, that you can... Can you verbalize what you don't understand, or is that asking too much?
I don't think I really can verbalize it, Jack.
Yeah, no,
just trying to understand the whole premise. I get kind of stuck on my narrow focus on the meanings of the words and the language, so I'm just really trying to fight through that.
Okay, well, I don't know if that's a narrow focus. Ooh. Exciting. We have all these people. So who just joined us in the last minute?
This is Ken and Christine Winberg.
Hi, guys.
Good morning.
I'm Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
Yes, hi. It's Karen.
Hi, Karen.
And Bruce.
Hi, Bruce. Okay. So we had started in, and David from Vancouver was saying he's having a hard time just getting past the narrow meaning of the words. And I was starting to say that the words are not necessarily narrow. I mean, sure, in the end we want to be dealing with experience, but part of what the theme is here is that words really give us the structure of our experience, create the field communique. And what we want to be doing is just make sure we are clear. This is the kind of fundamental level. Make sure we're clear what Rinpoche is saying about that. And the alternative he's suggesting. So, that's not narrow. That's just, that's what we're doing. that's what we'd like to get clear. Yeah.
I wasn't talking about the words being narrow. I was talking about my narrow interpretation of the words, of living for, 45 years of using a word for one and having one particular meaning for it and then trying to break outside of that meaning.
Yeah, okay, that's good. So give me an example. Space, for instance, is that what you're, or what, give me an example of a word that you think you're coming at in too narrow a way.
Well, I think maybe the whole the three main words, space, time, and dollars.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that is exactly what Rinpoche is trying to do, is get us to open up our understanding of those. So, we're focused on space. Hi, who's that?
This is Robert.
Hi, Robert. No problem. So we're focused on space and what we're doing right now, and the question is, how do we get beyond our ordinary understanding of what space is and move more in the direction of what Rinpoche is trying to point out? So that gets right to the heart of what we're trying to do. I think that the notion of the communique is an attempt to do that. So let's just go back over that again for a minute, because I'm sure that other people would benefit from it too.
Sie haben die maximale Aufnahmezeit erreicht. Vielen Dank. Auf Wiederhören.
That was Brigitte's answering machine leaving us. Okay. So, hi, who's that?
Hi, it's Christopher.
Oh, Christopher, you're up early in the morning again. Thank you so much. Okay. So we're talking about the field communique as a different way of understanding space. The thing that I think Rinpoche is saying here, who's that?
Bridget.
Oh, good. I'm glad you could join us.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking about the field communique in space. I think what Rinpoche is really pointing to when he talks about the field communique is that the world that we live in depends on space, and everybody would accept that when it comes to physical space. That is to say, you know, things don't exist, trees and tables and chairs, without space. But Rinpoche's point is that that holds in a much more global way, that the world that we live in is crafted by our understanding of what's going on. And he's using the word space to refer to that understanding. In other words, he's using space in a way that doesn't separate it out from knowledge. You know, the space of the world, which is, in the way he's talking about it right now, is the field communique, is that kind of allowing structure, which is not different, or, let's put it this way, our usual sense of space is a specific example of that. And I think we talked about this last week, but there's a really clarifying point that he makes at the very beginning of the very first book when he says, wherever we go, we have space above us in the form of the sky. So above us and around us, you could say. But he's specifically talking about the sky, and he says the sky is a local representative of space. And you could use that, you could think of that on the physical level, but I think ultimately he's pointing to something broader, which is what we're talking about here, and that is that we move in a world, and that world has a defining, shaping space. It's kind of the field of all possibilities. And so when he's using the word space here, right now, in this context, what he's trying to get us to look at is that shaping, defining matrix. And that's the field communique. And you know, if you look ahead, or if you try to look at that in terms of the vision as a whole, you could say the reason that that's really important is that when you start to think about space in that way, then the knowledge component comes into the foreground, because knowledge is built into space. The shaping, structuring matrix, those are the words I'm using right now, necessarily involves a way of knowing. And you know, it wouldn't make sense if our ordinary sense of space couldn't be included in that broader sense of space. But the point is that it can. That physical space makes sense when you're talking about physical objects, just in the same way that you could say mental space makes sense when you're talking about mental objects. There's an example from a Buddhist text. I was just teaching a course that involved this text last week, where the text says, if you see a female, a woman body, the practitioner, someone who's seriously involved in Buddhist practice, says, oh, a living walking corpse, and a dog, a wild dog who sees the female, says, oh, something good to eat. And the young man says, oh, a lover. And those are really all examples, you could say, of the field communique. So space has that kind of subjective dimension, but it's probably better not to use the word subjective and just think of it in terms of the knowledge dimension, the world that we live in gets put together out of this communicated field, and that is the way Rinpoche is talking about space. So, yeah, it's a broader understanding than we usually have. That's kind of a review or a summary of some of what we've been talking about. Let me stop there and see, get some reactions, maybe starting with you, since we put you on the spot, David.
I think I'll just listen, Jack.
Okay, that's fine. Anybody else?
Hi, Jack. This is Robert here.
Yeah.
I had one. I struggled a bit with one of the lines in your instructions for the week on the field communicate. And that was that, and I'll read it again. And it says that And that field communicate that the reality of what can appear, and that field communicates the reality of what can appear in the field. What can be communicated in the field is real, or potentially real, and what cannot be communicated cannot be real. It was that last little bit that I kind of struggled with, that given, you know, what we know about physics these days, and given our own, you know, limited senses, there's things out there that must, you know, that we can't see that seem to, you know, that seem to be proven to be real. And is there even a broader field out there than we actually see? And I kind of got stuck on that for a while.
Okay. Well, my sense there is that we have this interesting model of reality, which is based on physics or based on science. And it says, you know, what really is real is the kinds of things that scientists measure or postulate in order to make sense of the result of their experiments.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, if you look at something like a quark, or you know, the great example nowadays is dark space or dark energy that people are really kind of concerned about. If you look at these things, they're not real in the sense that we come into contact with them, or in the sense,
right,
you know, in our usual sense of real. They're real because we have a working definition of real, which is that, you know, whatever we postulate to make sense of the result of our experience is real.
Yeah.
And given that definition, given that field, which is a very theoretical field, then those things can be communicated. You know, we communicate them as having that kind of reality.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yeah, no, that helps. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I had in mind anyway. you know, there's an interesting, I was thinking of an example of that struck me as interesting. We've just gone through an election here in the United States, and people have been following it all over, so that's nice. It's a good example. It's a good example because, you know, for most people, and I know Christine and Ken, I know you actually went and saw Obama, for instance, out there. But for most people, what's been going on in the election campaign is absolutely a matter of what we see on television and what we hear, or on the radio and read in the newspapers. That's the reality that it has. And yet we refer it to a reality. We figure that they're, you know, in fact, the candidates go and talk to large crowds and all these things that we read about. But I was thinking, you know, what if this whole thing were actually a big television drama? You know, like there was an ongoing series, a 2-year series, that every week featured the story of this African American candidate for president who was running, and you know, the whole thing basically. But it was a show on television instead of being reality. How would it feel different? That's really my question. You know, if we tuned in every day and we got very involved in it and we were very interested, how would it feel different from it being the reality? You know, now we've elected a president, and this president can make choices that affect the world, and I mean, that's part of the answer, I guess. But what would the actual feeling of the difference be?
Well, I think you just hit the sort of the nail on the head there, Jack. With the reality is that this person is going to take actions that affect the entire world, and I think that's why the entire world, you know, we just had an election up here in Canada, but I think more people watched the American election, which ended a couple weeks later, than our own Canadian election, because the impact on your personal life seems to be greater. But you know, I think the interesting thing and point that you're raising, which you could sort of tie into it, is as much of that impact is what you see on TV anyway. Like, so
right.
Much of the, you know, the war or this or that happened on TV as well. So it could actually all become part of a TV drama as opposed to a personal drama.
Somebody else was going to speak up? Nope. Okay.
Can we say that we allow our reality to be, that the field is what we allow to be, is real? I just see the practice to change the perspective, the positional or temporal. And my reaction was kind of astonishment. It struck me a bit how small my regular perspective is.
So,
do I understand what I want to say?
Yeah. No, I that seems right to me. The practice, the approach that TSK encourages, both through the reading and through the exercises, is to open or expand or in some way at least play with our usual perspective. And so if you do something along those lines and you realize that you're working with a limited perspective, that's absolutely moving in the direction that we want to go in. Can you give an example, Karin, of how you what kind of limitation you discovered, how the smallness of your usual perspective?
Well, I went along for a walk and I saw myself 100 meters above me, or 10 years ago, I saw only such a small situation for me. I didn't see all the other things around, all the people around, all the actions around, all the things which are going around me.
Mm-hmm. So you could only do one at a time. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting. You know, one of the things I was doing some other work with TSK during the week, and so I was looking at a lot of the books, and there are a couple of them, including Dynamics, but which really talk about the importance of imagination as a tool. And so as you were speaking, I was thinking, you know, it would be interesting if you are out for a walk and you're thinking about yourself 10 years ago or looking at yourself from a distance, could you expand that imagination to include whatever you encounter? So if you see somebody coming towards you on the street or on the trail, you know, what were they like 10 years ago? And you absolutely have to imagine that. You don't know. But it might be interesting, you know, as though everything that you encountered was carrying its history with it. And of course, maybe carrying its future with it. That could be a little overwhelming. but it would be, you know, I think the idea is always to be willing to experiment and expand. And so this quality of expanding that we've been talking about and working with for a little while now, that's where that's meant to lead. Now, I wanted to introduce the idea of condensing also. You know, some of you know that the exercise, as it was written down in When It Rains, and also the way that the exercise has been taught for many years in TSK, but it hasn't been written down anywhere else. The exercise is called expanding and condensing. And people always have a harder time with condensing, I think because people imagine that it means you have to make everything small. And that really is not the point. The idea with condensing is to make it, maybe one way to say it is to focus on making it more real. You know, if you have an object and you kind of condense it by taking away the parts that don't matter, then in the end you're left with something that is very, very real or solid, and it's gotten smaller in the course of doing that, maybe, but the smallness is not what matters. It's the more intense, more dense quality of it. And you know, we've been focusing a lot on expanding. The reason I wanted to introduce condensing now is because our sense of what's real is exactly tied into this sense of being very condensed. In other words, you know, if you take the example of Barack Obama, you know, the reality of Barack Obama and the election as compared to Barack Obama as a television series, the difference between the two is you could think of it in terms of expanding in the sense that, you know, the election has consequences that expand out beyond itself into the rest of the world. That's what Robert was saying. But you could also think of it in terms of condensing. It's like there is something more solid and substantial about Barack Obama, the president-elect, than, you know, Batman or or some other character in the movies, you know. So that would be a way to look, too. And I actually was thinking that maybe we could do an exercise here on the phone right now. That is from Love of Knowledge, and Rinpoche doesn't present it as an exercise as such, but he asks us to do it as a kind of an experiment, and I thought maybe we could do that. Here's the experiment. You take look around you and find some object. In the book he talks about a light switch, but just find some object. And look at it and try to get a sense of the realness of that object. And then, when you've had some sense of that, close your eyes and visualize the same object. And try to see what is the difference between the real object and the object that you visualize. And, you know, there'll be questions of stability and not being able to keep the image in your mind. But just just see what happens. What's the difference between those two? So why don't we do that for just a couple of minutes? You can pick one object and then go to another or stay with one, however you want to do it. Okay? Should we do that together? Okay. Okay, let's stop there. Anybody have anything to say about that?
For me, there were a couple things. This is Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And one was just a different sense of vividness of it. Another was an element that is when I was concentrating on the object and when I closed my eyes and was visualizing it, I had lost connection to all the surrounding parts of the room that seemed to support it in its fixed place. And then there was also this sense of expectation that I could interact with it in other ways besides visually. So then I kind of played with that and started imagining, you know, in my mind, reaching out and having the same experience of turning it and opening the door. I was looking at a doorknob. And so then it was somewhat paralleling, you know, the same structure of what I would expect in a real situation where I could interact with it and have something else happen. But there was still this element of convincingness that wasn't there, in part because I knew I could, with my visualization, just transparentize the door and see what was outside, you know, imaginatively, whereas in the other situation, I felt like there are these more definite limitations that I have to deal with.
Okay, well, I think that's a really nice analysis. I think all those features come into play. Anybody else?
Yes, I have something to add there. Just, Tracy, another dimension that was there for me was the awareness that you all were on the phone while I'm experiencing this. You know, and, you know, whatever I might have to say about it is like it affects how I'm experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. But that would be true even if we just said, you know, look really hard at whatever the object is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. That is definitely a part of it. And you know, I guess both of those comments go to this whole idea of the field communique because, you know, something shows up in terms of a field. That's I think it's a really helpful way to think of it. And so, you know, Tracy, you're saying part of the field is this phone conversation. Bruce, you pointed out that there is this, you know, there are ways in which we narrow down the field. One way is we're not aware of all the other objects that support it. And I think when you said that, when you talk about supporting, that's exactly right, and refers back to what Rinpoche refers to at one point in the reading as objects being mutually referring. That is, one object refers to every other object, and we're kind of stripping away the mutual referring supporting background when we do this exercise. So that's part of the difference. And then the other part of the field, or an other part, which Bruce, you also referred to, was the different sense modalities. You know, that, okay, we see it, and then we can visualize seeing it, but there are the other, you know, we could reach out and touch it, we could turn it, we could use it to open the door. But, you know, suppose you got really good at visualizing. I mean, you could visualize all of those things too, right? There's no particular reason not to. And I suppose that in the end, that would lead to the idea that you could visualize your whole reality, you know. Or another, you know, you could flip that around and say, well, maybe what we're doing in our reality is something like a visualization. But then, you know, you can't really say that we're doing it because we're part of the reality. And that just, that then becomes another way of talking about the field communique. So the visualized object and the real object both have their space. They both have their field. And the field or the space really determines our reaction to what they are. In other words, you know, we react to one as real and we react to one as just imagined because of the space and the characteristics and properties of that space, but ultimately, even more fundamentally, because of the space.
Jack?
Yes?
Implicit in what's been said so far by the others and yourself is that each example, either imagined or this one I see on the shelf over there, is a different experience of the self to the self that's experiencing. The experiencer is also differently communicated in the field.
Yes, you're right. That's, you know, we haven't focused on that, but if you start thinking about what is meant by a field and what's being communicated, then that clearly has to follow. Now, one of the characteristics of a field, or you could say of space, is that it tends to communicate the same thing. I have to put that in quotation marks. It tends to communicate the same thing again and again and again and again. Our natural tendency is to recreate the same, you could say. And part of the reason for that is because we're very committed to staying the same self over time, the same person over time. So, you know, there are some constraints on the field communique, not because they're real constraints, not because it couldn't be different, but because there are certain things we're not willing to consider. We're not willing to have communicated. And I think it would take us too far afield to start talking about all of that, but it's maybe something to think about. Any other comments about that particular exercise or anything that we've talked about so far today? Okay. Well, I introduced the idea of condensing, and I'll put something up on the website about that. And some things that I think may be helpful, in talking about the field communique. Now, we actually skip a few pages in the chapter at this point in the reading. The reading for this week is only 3 pages, and the chapter is about 9 pages. You can, of course, feel free to read the rest of it, but I had some reason for doing that at the time. I think I was just trying to make sure we stayed focused tightly on something that would help us get clear on the main point. But the rest of the chapter is great. It's not like I think it's not worth reading. It is. So it's up to you. You can read it if you like. Okay, anything else before we close? Great. Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye. Thank you.